This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at southdakotachannel.org.
At this time, we'll call to order the Senate State Affairs. We would like to greet the listeners on the internet and also welcome the guests that have come in attendance. And at this time, I'd like the pages to introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about your current endeavors and what your future might bring. Come to the microphone and state your name.
I'm Elizabeth Peterson. I'm from Beersford, and I plan to go into political science pre-law in college.
I'm Mallory Gower. I go to Ipswich, and I plan on majoring in dental hygiene.
Oh. I'm Hannah Grunwald. I go to Clark, and I plan on majoring in business management, NSU.
At this time, I'd like to remind everyone on the committee and in the audience to turn their cell phones off. Any infraction of that will require those folks to provide jerky for the entire Senate State Affairs the next meeting. And I just found out that mine was on just a second ago, but I didn't get caught with the ring. So at this time, I'd have the secretary call the roll.
Senators Hunhoff?
Here.
Sutton?
Here.
Brown?
Here.
Pauline?
Here.
Otten?
Here.
Soholt?
Here.
Teason?
Here.
Solano?
Here.
Kamak?
Here. We have a quorum. We'll move on to we would accept a motion for the approval of the minutes of the last meeting.
So moved.
So moved by Senator Holine, seconded by?
Second.
Senator Solano. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
I'd like to remind anyone that plans to testify that you need to sign in at the back of the room. Make sure you sign in legibly. Any lobbyists must wear their badges, and any handouts that you have will be distributed by the pages, and any questions for the committee will be addressed through the chair. Are there any changes to today's agenda? If not, we'll move on to today's agenda, and we've got consideration of bills. The first bill up would be Senate Bill 6, and that's to revise certain performance security requirements for public improvement contracts. Are there any proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of committee. My name is Christy Honeywell. I'm the state engineer, and I work in the Bureau of Administration, and I'm here this morning in support of Senate Bill 6. For public improvement projects, all contractors are required to furnish a performance security before starting work in the amount no less than 100% of the contract amount. These payment and performance bonds do a couple of things for us. First, if the contractor does not or is unable to complete the project, we can use the PMP bond to hire another contract to complete the work for us. Secondly, if the contractor fails to pay his or her subcontractors, we can then use that bond to pay those subs. Senate Bill 6 amends the statute in two ways. First, it repeals the section of statute that requires the state, acting through the BOA, to waive performance securities for projects less than $50,000. This section conflicts with Chapter 52111, which allows but doesn't require the public corporation to waive the PMP bond if the contract is less than the bid limit, which is $50,000. These poor public corporations include the state, local governmental units, and school district. This portion of the bill cleans up these two conflictive statutes. Secondly, the bill allows the public corporation to waive these performance securities if the project is an emergency as defined in law. Emergency procurements are allowable if there exists a threat to human public health, welfare, or safety, or for other urgent and compelling reasons. As I mentioned before, the time that it takes to get a legally proper bond in place prior to the contractor commencing work can be very difficult and impractical in the case of some emergencies. This addition to the statute is permissive and will allow the public corporation to complete an emergency process project in a timely manner. So because of these reasons, I ask for your yes vote on Senate Bill 6. Thank you very much, and I'll stand by for questions.
Are there any further proponents? If there are no further proponents, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 6? If there are no opponents, We would ask if anyone had any questions for the testifier. Senator Sol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just have a question of the proponent. Thank you. So it seems all reasonable, and I appreciate the part about the waiving the security with the emergency. Do you have any concerns about just projects starting to move on and we haven't had the security of they're going to follow through on the work that has been committed?
Mr. Chairman? Senator, I'm not concerned about that because emergencies typically are only those that have to be done right now. In my opinion, if you would have a two-step or a three-step process, you would just do the emergency piece and then you would put that project out in phases and competitively bid it and require the performance security.
Follow up, Mr. Chair? Thank you. So, okay, so let's just say, and that's all fine in emergency, but then in just routine projects, and I think I didn't frame my question properly to you, so I apologize for that. But just in a routine project, are you concerned then in the timing of the appropriate securities so that we can be assured that, you know, particularly in projects with tax dollars, that they would follow through on their performance? Or is that just a natural part of the process that would happen? And, you know, this, by changing this statute language, we don't have to worry about that?
Mr. Chairman? Senator, yes, that's correct. For every other project that's not an emergency, if the contract amount is over $50,000, a PMP bond is required. Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Senator Sutton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have there been these emergency cases, and can you walk me through an example of what that might be?
Mr. Chairman? Senator, there have been recently, USD actually had a project that was a waterline break. It needed to be done right away, and we had a difficult time doing that. We get in a situation where the statute does say you have to do it, you have to have performance security before you start the work, and we're in a very difficult situation in that particular case. I could also see a situation, say, for instance, we have a high wind and we have a roof that blows off and we absolutely have to have that done right away. And it could be over $50,000, so we want to be able to start that work right away.
Are there any further questions? Senator Hunoff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, how long does it take normally to get a performance security bond? Is it days, weeks?
Mr. Chairman? Senator, it can be. Typically, it might take 1 to 2 to 3 weeks once it gets through the Attorney General's office. They actually have to check to make sure that the language is legal and valid.
Are there any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, we would close the public testimony at this time and move it back to the committee for additional discussion and or action. Senator Brown.
Move due pass on Senate Bill 6.
It's been moved by Senator Brown, due pass on Senate Bill 6, and it's been seconded by Senator Sutton. Is there any further discussion? If there's no further discussion, we would have the secretary call the roll.
Senators Hunhoff?
Aye.
Sutton?
Aye.
Brown?
Aye.
Holeen?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Soholt?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Solano?
Aye.
Kamak?
Aye.
9-0.
The motion is due pass on Senate Bill 6. And it's a 9-2-0, and the motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I would move consent on Senate Bill 6.
It's been moved by Senator Solano. Solano. Soholt. Senator Soholt, and seconded by Senator Brown to move consent. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Senate Bill 6 has a due pass on notes on consent. We will move on to Senate Bill 27. It's revised certain personnel requirements for ambulance services and to repeal the hardship exemption.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tom Martinez. I'm the Deputy Secretary of the State Department of Health. The purpose of Senate Bill 27 is to repeal the hardship exemption for ambulance services and to establish minimum training and competency requirements for ambulance drivers. Senate Bill 27 represents a collaborative effort to address one of the many challenges, other than getting my glasses out of my suit jacket. But, yeah, Senate Bill 27 represents a collaborative effort to help address one of the many challenges facing our EMS system here in South Dakota, and that is the ability of individual ambulance services to maintain a competent and effective workforce. Excuse me. Just a little background information. You may recall that last year via an executive reorganization order, Governor Dugard moved the Office of Emergency Medical Services from the Department of Public Safety to the Department of Health. One of the main reasons for doing so was so that the state could better leverage our existing programs and resources that are dedicated to addressing our healthcare workforce needs. Subsequent to the EMS office moving over to the Department of Health, we, of course, began learning about EMS in general. The learning curve was pretty steep for us, and we began identifying the issues and challenges facing emergency medical services here in South Dakota. And it didn't take long for us to realize that, like many other states, we're in the same boat as many other states, South Dakota has a mountain of challenges ahead of us when it comes to EMS. And ensuring adequate access to quality emergency medical services for all South Dakotans is one of the biggest challenges of them all. In the interest of working collaboratively to begin addressing the issues and challenges facing EMS in South Dakota, this past summer we pulled together in what we called an EMS stakeholders work group. The work group consisted of over 40 individuals representing a variety of organizations, and it was a voluntary thing. We just put out a call, and whoever wanted to participate was welcome to participate. But small ambulance services were represented, large ambulance services, EMTs, paramedics, the State Medical Association, the Board of Medicine, hospital administrators, SADAHO, the Municipal League, the Association of County Commissioners, and we also had three legislators kind of help us through this effort. Senator Brown was kind enough to participate, as well as Representative Feikert and Representative Gibson. The work group held four meetings throughout the summer, and ultimately the work group came to a consensus on 10 recommendations dealing with issues related to workforce, quality, sustainability, and infrastructure. And as a side note, if you're interested in learning further information about the work group, we have the meeting summaries and the final report can be found on the department's website, and on the bill brief I provided to you at the very bottom, it has the website address for that. So Senate Bill 27 focuses on one of the work group's recommendations, a recommendation specific to the issue of workforce, and it's the hardship exemption. So under current law and administrative rule, ambulance services are required to send at a minimum two emergency medical technicians out on each ambulance run. And that includes both emergency runs and transfer runs. And emergency runs are your 911 calls, typical, emergency runs. Transfer runs are where you have a medically stable patient that just needs to be transferred between healthcare facilities. So the hospital to the nursing home, those types of situations. If an ambulance service cannot ensure that they will have at least two EMTs available 24/7, they have the ability under state law and administrative rule to apply for a hardship exemption. The hardship exemption gives them the ability to operate at an absolute minimum level of service by allowing them to send just one EMT and a driver on an ambulance run. And essentially, the only requirement currently for the driver is that they have a valid driver's license. In order to receive a hardship exemption, an ambulance service must submit a written application to the department that includes the reason for the requested exemption and a plan to prevent the need for future exemptions. The department then conducts a public hearing in the local community where the ambulance service is located. A notice of the public hearing is posted in the local newspaper 10 days prior to the hearing. After the public hearing is held, the department then considers the application and information gathered via the public hearing, and upon a showing of, quote, exceptional circumstances, unquote, the department then can grant that ambulance service a hardship exemption. And hardship exemptions are only good for 1 year, so every year this process has to be completed in order for a service to maintain or continue on the hardship exemption. So, obviously, Senate Bill 27 is seeking to repeal the hardship exemption. So what's the problem with it? Well, there's a number of them. First of all, we have a significant number of ambulance services that are currently on hardship exemptions. We have 123 licensed ambulance services in the state currently. 31, or 25% of those licensed services, are currently on a hardship exemption. I believe that the hardship exemption was put into place in 1980, and I think it was at a time, and it was a mechanism that was supposed to be, I believe, supposed to be used fairly sparingly. The current practice is it's actually pretty common. All of the service, and I'll refer you, I passed out a map of South Dakota, and it has blue stars and red stars on it, and the stars represent where these licensed ambulance services are located, and the red stars are the ones services that are currently on a hardship exemption. And as you can see, there's really no kind of geographic difference between where these services are located, you know, or that are on hardship exemption. They're across the state. It isn't an East River or West River type of thing. They're kind of spread out all over. So all of the services with hardship exemptions have them for the very same reason. They're all struggling to find EMTs. They're struggling with workforce issues just like many healthcare facilities in the state are. So when you think about it, it's really not difficult to understand why. First of all, many of the services with hardship exemptions are located in rural communities, so you don't have a big population to recruit EMTs from to begin with. And then it also takes, a very dedicated and committed individual to work as an EMT. To become an EMT basic, which is the lowest level of training to become an EMT in the state, requires 160 hours of training. And then Once you become an EMT, there are continuing education requirements on top of that. And then I'll maintain that not everyone is cut out to be an EMT either. I believe it takes a special type of person willing to do the work that EMTs do. You know, it's really 100% about wanting to help people in crisis situations. On top of all that, many of the small services are volunteer services. So in many instances, there is no financial incentive for an individual to become involved with their local ambulance service. In fact, it probably doesn't come to a surprise to anyone, but the time of day when a lot of small rural ambulance services struggle to have an adequate number of EMTs available to go out on ambulance calls is between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. during the week, Monday through Friday. And of course, that's because that's when these folks are working their regular jobs to earn a living, and so they're not available at those times. So another problem with the hardship exemption is the current staffing requirement for services on hardship exemption, not on hardship exemption, again, the two EMTs on all runs, actually exceeds the norm for most states. By the information we were able to gather, and we did kind of a quick poll of the states, the majority of the states have a minimum staffing requirement of a driver and an EMT, and that's exactly what the requirement for those on a hardship exemption allows. The third problem, and I mentioned this earlier, is there's essentially no training or competency requirements for the drivers of ambulance services on hardship exemption. Now, I'd like to think that, and I believe that most of these drivers are getting some basic, you know, on-the-job type of training, but but the fact of the matter is nothing is required for those drivers. Now, while on the surface, the hardship exemption process seems like it's probably a substantive and worthwhile process. From our perspective, it really doesn't have a lot of value for either the ambulance service or for the department. I wanted to experience a hardship exemption public hearing myself. So this past summer, staff and I went up to, and I won't mention the community, but it's a community about an hour and a half from here. And we'd put the notice in the paper 10 days ahead of the hearing, like we expected. And I wasn't sure what to expect. I'd never been to a hearing. I was assuming that there was going to be at least, you know, a room full of people from the community that wanted to talk about this hardship exemption. One person showed up. It was the ambulance service director who actually happened to be the administrator of the hospital as well. The reasons they gave for needing to be on the hardship exemption is what we hear from all ambulance services. It's getting harder and harder to find people willing to do it. Those who are EMTs are currently EMTs and serving on the services are becoming burnt out. Someone's you know, life situation changes. They get a different job, and so they're not available. They have a baby, and so they can't go on runs. It's just standard stuff. And so the experience was a little overwhelming for me. And again, from the department's perspective, the process, it consumes staff time and resources that we feel could be better spent providing technical assistance and implementing programs that actually assist ambulance services in dealing with these workforce challenges that quite frankly, are only going to increase and get worse as time goes by and our population ages. So the stakeholders work group this past summer had a very thorough discussion regarding workforce challenges and the hardship exemption. There was a lot of discussion about the difficulty of recruiting and retaining EMTs, about the minimum staffing, about what the minimum staffing levels for ambulance services should be, about the current lack of training and competency requirements for non-EMT drivers, and about the value of the hardship process itself or maybe the lack thereof, and about how the current workforce challenges truly threaten our ability to maintain adequate access to healthcare services for all South Dakotans. And I'll refer you back to the map. A lot of those places where those stars are representing those ambulance services, that's really it for healthcare services in a lot of those rural areas. So ultimately, this led to the work group recommendation to eliminate the hardship exemption and that we change the minimum staffing requirement from two EMTs to one EMT and a qualified driver. The work group felt strongly that the driver should have, at a minimum, some basic training in CPR in emergency vehicle operation, and also should be required to demonstrate competencies regarding patient confidentiality, infection control, patient movement, and ambulance equipment and communication systems. So that is why we're here today asking for your support of Senate Bill 27. And the bill's pretty straightforward, and to quickly walk through it with you. Section 1 adds a new statute that states at the minimum, states the minimum personnel requirements for ambulances, and again, one EMT or an advanced life support personnel, and a driver that meets the minimum established requirements in administrative rule. And we currently have a work group looking at the issue of what the qualifications the driver would look like, and we'd put those in rule in the event that we're successful with this legislation. Section 2 of the bill repeals the statutory language regarding the hardship exemption, and Sections 3 and 6 repeal administrative rules pertaining to the hardship exemptions. So in the discussions and with the stakeholders regarding this issue and with repealing the hardship exemption, the big concern that was raised was the lowering of the quality of care of EMS in South Dakota. And So the question is, will it be lowered by getting rid of the hardship exemption? reducing that standard down from two EMTs to one EMT and a qualified driver. And I don't believe so. And the consensus of the work group was that it won't, and for a variety of reasons. First of all, the vast majority of ambulance services, they want to run with two EMTs, whether it's required or not, especially on emergency runs. When they're responding to the scene of a highway accident or something like that, having a minimum two EMTs there is absolutely necessary, in that it's really too big a job for just one EMT. So the most significant change that we think we're going to see with this, with eliminate the hardship exemption, is with transfer runs. And our data shows roughly about 25% of all ambulance runs are transfer runs. And again, this is where they're transporting a medically stable patient between healthcare facilities, again, hospital to a nursing home or from a hospital to a larger hospital. By and large, I'm told that most of these runs, because the patient is medically stable, they're relatively uneventful. That doesn't mean that something can't happen, but most of the time, they're pretty uneventful. So if you're not on a hardship exemption right now and you're in an ambulance service doing a transfer run, you're required to have an EMT drive that ambulance. And we believe that that's probably not the best use of personnel. So the biggest difference we see, or the biggest change we see with eliminating the hardship exemption, is probably with those transfer runs. Also, you know, from a healthcare facility's perspective, where we don't dictate minimum staffing levels, we don't dictate them for hospitals or nursing homes or assisted living, we found that more personnel doesn't necessarily equate to better quality of care. It's really more complicated than that. With healthcare facilities, instead of counting staff, we focus on staff training, staff competencies, and ultimately patient outcomes to assess quality of care. We have programs in place to support healthcare facilities with their efforts to enhance the quality of care being provided in their facilities, and it's the department's intention to explore ways in which we can do the same for ambulance services. And in fact, that is one of the 10 recommendations that came out of the stakeholders work group. And again, we're not proposing something that is out of the norm. Again, most states, the majority of the states, only require one EMT and a driver. And also, by requiring some minimum training and demonstrated competencies for those non-EMT drivers, we're actually increasing the personnel requirements for those services that are actually currently on hardship and running with that driver that isn't required to have any training. So, and then lastly, I'll just note, we're also going to be keeping an eye on the situation by reviewing the reported trip data that's required to be submitted by ambulance services to the department. We're in the process of making a change to that software that will allow us to compare runs that are made with one EMT versus two EMTs. And so through that review of the data, and then also through our complaint investigation process, if we start seeing trends that indicate that this change is truly lowering the quality of EMS services out there, obviously that's going to be a problem, and we'll be looking to address that in the future. But again, that isn't what we're expecting to see. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I've been talking for a long time, and I know there are others here that want to testify and support the bill. So we respectfully urge you to support Senate Bill 27. I'll certainly stand by for questions. Thank you.
Are there any further proponents?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League, rising in support of this bill. It's going to literally mean some of those rural ambulances are going to be able to stay in business because they had such trouble with the staffing requirements. And so it's going to make a tremendous difference out in those smaller areas. We urge your support of the bill, and I also want to point out that we really appreciate the approach that the department took. They put together a group of people that really had an interest in this. It was a great process, and they came to the table thinking, what's going to do practical good out in the real world, and they've come up with that, and we're anxious to see what the next steps will be. But we urge your support of the bill. Thank you.
Any further proponents?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Maynard Konechny, representing the South Dakota Emergency Medical Association, which some of you probably remembered as the Emergency Medical Technicians. We changed our name a couple years ago. Rising in favor of this legislation. As time goes on, being an EMT for 42 years in my local community in a rural service, it's getting harder and harder for people to take the class, give up time. There's more things in schools for the kids to do. But once they, with the legislation, by dropping the requirement to one EMT and a driver, as Deputy Martinik said, there's 31 services that are on a hardship. There's another 60 of them services that probably should be on that hardship. And if they're running against the law, they actually should not be getting Medicare when they go on a call. So hopefully that this will take care of that issue, that we won't have to worry about that. But defining the driver, what he does, is one of the things that we talked about in the stakeholders group, and I think that will really solve a lot of the problem. But as far as dropping the quality of care, when you're going down the road, that driver is not going to be able to help you in the back of the rig. It's just that EMT, and he should have the competency to be able to take care of that patient back there. The lowering of the standards, I don't think that's going to be a thing, because this is going to be a minimum. And I know there's some services that says, well, I can save money now by doing this. But we've told some of those people in those communities that you need to work with them, that your minimum standards are still going to be with two EMTs or a paramedic and an EMT. And in my local service in Kimball, we've been on a hardship for 3 years because we're down to about four people during the day. And one of those individuals used to work for the city council or for the city maintenance crew, and he could drop and go all the time. When he went with the county, we had to go on the hardship. But we still try and maintain. I think in the 3 years, we've only had about three calls where we have utilized the hardship. So we still try and maintain that. But it's really tough in other areas because they work in other places during the day. Use an example of the town that's next to me. They've got about six EMTs over there, and two of them work in planking in the next neighboring town, and they actually work with their ambulance during the day, which leaves their town unprotected. So the hardship would help them out in those situations too. And as Tom also stated, with the cost and the hardship of having to do that every year, it's an added cost to the department because they advertise in all the papers that our services represent, that we pick patients up. And like in our area, they have to put that in three different papers and then come out and do a public hearing. And normally the only people that are there, as he said, is a director, or maybe if we do it during an EMT training session, our other EMTs are there, but there's usually nobody from the public that even shows up. So I would consider your support on this bill, on this measure, and I would stand by for questions.
Thank you. Are there any further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Eric Erickson, representing the South Dakota Association of County Commissioners. I would like to first thank the Department of Health for their leadership on this issue. We did have members on the committee support the bill and urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further proponents?
Good morning, Sir Chairman and members of the committee. I am Sean Fisher, representing myself. I'm the director of the Sturgis Ambulance. I'm also the secretary of the South Dakota Ambulance Association, and I also served on the committee this summer with the work group. I am here in support of Senate Bill 27. We feel that this will not decrease care in any way. If anything, we're increasing care with a quarter of your ambulance services in South Dakota not having the adequate staffing needed, and you're allowing anyone to drive that ambulance. With this requirement, you're going to have something for that driver. That driver is going to have emergency care. They're going to know how to transport a patient. They're going to know what to do if something does go wrong. Right now, I talked to an ambulance director on the way up here. He is down to three members on the Faith Ambulance Service. Their transportation time is a minimum of 3 to 4 hours. If you have to take two people out of that town, you're talking Enning is the next closest ambulance service, not including Eagle Butte, which is on the reservation, or us in Sturgis, which is 100 miles away. If something goes wrong between that transport time and you have someone driving that has no medical experience at all, that person codes needing CPR, and the driver doesn't even have CPR training, that driver cannot even get in back and help until an ambulance service could get there to help them. You're increasing the care for your patients in the rural areas. In Sturgis, we have a hard time staffing calls. We run three crews a day, and when we take long-distance transfers, we're taking two people out of town that we could be leaving one in town that to cover calls. There's many days that we'll have four ambulances out, and if I could, I'm not going to decrease my care. I'm going to keep two EMTs, paramedics, etc. But if I could send someone to Sioux Falls that needs a driver and I know they have medical experience, I could cover our area better. I strongly urge your approval of Senate Bill 27, and I will stand by for any questions.
Are there any further proponents? If there's no further proponents, are there any opponents? If there are no opponents, are there any questions that by the committee for any of the proponents of the bill? If there are no questions, we would close public testimony and move it back to the committee for discussion and or action. Senator Brown.
Move do pass on Senate Bill 27.
Second. It's been moved by Senator Brown, seconded by Senator Soholt. Do pass on Senate Bill 27. Is there any further discussion or questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown.
I'd like to make some comments, and I think both the Municipal League and the counties indicated this. I think we saw some true leadership from the Department of Health in this arena, recognizing that we have some concerns in this field, and to take that effort and initiative to actually pull the stakeholders together to work together towards some solutions, you don't always see that. So, you know, certainly kudos to those guys. The second point, though, that I would make, you know, the services that our paramedics and EMTs provide across the state in most cases are largely voluntary. And so, you know, these people put in a tremendous amount of time serving our communities to try to help keep us safe. What I thought was a tad bit of an irony, and it just shows this dedication. There are a number of these folks that sat in those stakeholder meetings that on their own accord, on their own dime, took the time this last summer to come out. And, you know, not only are they trying to serve their communities back home, but wanted to be engaged in this process as we move forward. And so certainly my thanks to you guys for what you do, and certainly the leadership you've shown here. Having said that, I think the one point that I would probably make in all of those discussions, as the deputy indicated, there were at least 10 recommendations that came out of this first round of meetings, and this is just simply one of the pieces that was out there. So, you know, anyone that votes for Senate Bill 27 and thinks that we've solved the, you know, the issues with our EMS service is probably gravely mistaken. I do feel confident, though, especially with the folks that have been behind this, that not only are those other nine issues going to be addressed, but I would fully expect that there are continuing conversations this year and beyond, you know, trying to find additional ways to keep what we have and to improve those services across the board.
Are there any further comments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Soholt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I really wanted to make a comment of thanks and gratitude to all the people that are in the emergency responder field and what you do for the citizens of the state of South Dakota. As a registered nurse who's, you know, worked in the health system, I really recognize that what happens to transport people, to appropriately transport people, to know what is it that they, you know, actually need to be able to respond to whatever you are encountering, you know, within the field. And it just really takes very special people with incredible dedication. And I appreciate in this bill that there has been good conversation to attend to the quality of, while we're changing the requirement of, you know, you could think, well, perhaps then everyone would lower their requirement, when in fact that is not true. You know, those that are in high areas of responding to emergency versus transfers that are of a non-acute nature, they're always going to travel with two. But to really recognize that in order to have health care in our state, and seeing how the population centers are changing and some of the sparsity issues that we're dealing with, for us to honor and respect that these folks still want to be in the field doing what they do and having statute that supports them to do it, I think is really important. So we encourage us to do pass.
Any further comments? Senator Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I echo a lot of the comments from the previous two speakers, but especially the comments that I would make coming from a rural district, that it is imperative that we do whatever we can to bolster and support our EMS services, but that I would echo what Senator Brown says, that if we think this is the fix, then we are mistaken, because we have a lot of work to do and a long ways to go on bolstering health care in our rural districts especially. And so I'd encourage us all to keep that in mind as we move forward to do what we can to support those areas. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further comments? If there's no further comments, I would like to add my own comment. I want to give a big thanks to all the folks that serve in this capacity. And believe me, I understand many a time I've heard those tones go off when I'm sleeping very soundly. My wife's been an EMT for almost 20 years. And we deal with a lot of things that are very important here at the legislature. But you folks truly deal with the life and death issues every time you go on a run. So appreciate that. And at this time, the motion on Senate Bill 27 is due pass. And at this time, I'd have the Secretary call the roll.
Senators Hunhoff.
Aye.
Sutton.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Holeen.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Soholt.
Aye.
Thiessen.
Aye.
Solano.
Aye.
Kamak.
Aye.
There are 9 ayes. The Senate Bill 27 passes with a due pass recommendation. At this time, unless there's further business, I would entertain a motion for adjournment. Moved by Senator Sutton.
Second.
Seconded by Senator Brown. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you for attending.